Have you ever looked into the night sky and wondered, are we alone? We've learned so much about the world and our universe, and yet we realize there are so many mysteries yet unsolved. If you are interested in the unexplained and mysterious in our world, then join us in The Night Search, a forum for discussion and exploration of the world just beyond our reach. And now, your host for Night Search, Eddie Middleton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Justin Abner, and tonight is Tuesday, November the 4th, 2014. And you're listening to Night Search. Eddie will be joining us shortly. He is actually running a little late, but he'll be joining us a little bit later. Tonight we have a fantastic guest for you all. His name is Robert Silas. He's actually Captain Robert Silas, retired from the Air Force. He was in the Air Force from 1964 through 1971, and he was an air traffic controller, missile launch officer, and engineer on the Titan III missiles. During his time there, he had an amazing UFO encounter, which you've probably seen or heard about from various TV programs, such as the ones that were on the History Channel. He also had some other amazing events that happened in his life. He's also worked for Martin Marietta Aerospace and Rockwell International on space shuttle design proposals. And I'm going to let him come out and tell a little bit more about himself. Robert, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great to have you on the show.
Good to be with you. I'm happy to tell my story again, as I've been doing for the last 20 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've been involved in the study of UFOs and other related phenomena for about 20 years, since about 1994. The incident in Montana happened March 24, 1967. I was a missile launch officer when a UFO came over and shut down all 10 of my missiles. We learned also then that the same thing had happened at another place called Echo Flight, which is just 35 miles to the northwest. And all 10 of their missiles shut down. Same circumstance with UFOs overhead. So within the span of 8 days, we lost 20 nuclear missiles to UFOs. This is well documented. People want to see some of the evidence in support of this incident or these two incidents. They can go to my website, spiralgalaxy.org, and there I've got details, evidence in the form of audio tapes of some of the witnesses and their statements and other documents. So they can do that. My book is available on Amazon.com. Actually, I've got two books, one called Fated Giant and the other one's called Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon. That's the latest one I've written.
Wow. So since the 20 years that you've been out, I know that you've been a rather large advocate for disclosure on this whole UFO phenomenon. I know you did some work with Stephen Bassett and them for the Citizens Hearing. Could you tell us a little bit about your time with them and what it was like
Sure.
to be a witness?
Sure, yeah. 2013, I think it was April or May, Stephen Bassett organized a citizens hearing on disclosure, which involved ex-congressman, senator, and presented the program as though it was an actual hearing before Congress. He had about 40 witnesses come forward, and we all told our stories as if we were in a congressional hearing. It was a good experience. I think the ex-Congress people were very impressed. Many of them were skeptics before we started and convinced that the UFO phenomenon is real at the end of it. So it was a good exercise. And now I think Mr. Bassett's trying to institute an actual congressional hearing, and he's trying to do this by sending videotapes of videos of the presenters at that hearing to each member of Congress, and hopefully follow it up with a request for a meeting and a hearing. So that effort is going to go on. I believe it's going to be kicked off this month and continue. We're hopeful that that'll yield some results.
Yeah, I hope so, because I've been tracking that pretty close myself, and I've been totally fascinated with the whole process. As far as yourself and your experiences, because I know you've had more than just that one experience in 1967, is that correct?
I do talk about another experience that I had in 1985. And that's in another part of the phenomenon, which is called the abduction phenomenon, where people are being taken up in extraterrestrial craft by, I believe, are extraterrestrials. I go into that in my book.
I was fascinated with your account of that. You and your wife both apparently were taken up, and I think your wife was put out of commission there the first time, I guess, when she wasn't aware of what was going on. You couldn't wake her up. That's so typical of many accounts of abductions that I'm familiar with. And I'm just really curious. You think there's any connection at all between your experience there at the nuclear launch facility, the thing that was hovering right outside the gate, and you felt maybe you had a telepathic communication with any connection maybe between that encounter and your later abduction episode?
Well, I can only speculate, but I think there is. I think people who have been taken this way are taken multiple times, and there's a purpose behind it. And again, that's up to speculation because they certainly didn't tell me. However, going back to the missile experience, one thing that I did feel after, you probably know I got two phone calls. First phone call from the topside guards, I was 60 feet underground in closed capsule. The first phone call, they're telling me about these lights in the sky, and I didn't pay much attention to it. And the second phone call, he's screaming into the phone, yelling that he's seeing some glowing red object above the front gate. And after we hung up with that phone call, I actually turned to my board, my status board, that showed the status of the missiles, and thought that something was going to happen to the missiles. So it's very possible I could have received a telepathic communication that something was going to happen. And sure enough, it did. And I don't discount the fact that, the ETs kept track of where I was in 1985 and what I discuss in the book on that abduction, I'm sure is only a small part of what actually happened, because these memories are really hard to, get complete picture. And so more than likely, I felt this since I went public in 1994, I felt a real commitment to the abolishment of nuclear weapons. So maybe that thought or that commitment came from that abduction experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked up definitely in reading your book that you think that they, for the most part, have a benign intent towards us, at least one of the major groups that are, you know, interacting with us. I know that Jacobs and Hopkins, for instance, they think it's more of a sinister agenda behind it, the alien interaction with the planet. But could you talk a little more about what you think maybe their ultimate plan is for us, or and how they might try to assist us in some way, or are they just going to...
Well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say I'm more inclined, again, this is speculation, but I'm more inclined to believe that they're more interested in our welfare rather than any nefarious objective with us. And the reason I say that is because especially the missile incidents or the nuclear weapons incidents, which have happened all over the world at nuclear facilities, where UFOs just come over and shine a beam of light or disrupt communications just to show that they're there. They wanted us to know they were there, obviously. They shut down on missiles, but they didn't do any damage to the missiles. That's got to be emphasized. There was no damage. They simply upset the guidance system, which required us to go out there and manually retarget the missiles. And
Ron.
And as far as I know, there's been no incident involving UFOs and nuclear weapons where there was any significant damage. So I think all they're trying to do is send us a message: get rid of your nuclear weapons. These are weapons of mass destruction that could simply wipe out human civilization as we know it and other living things. So. In that sense, I think they're sending us a benevolent message. They're kind of warning us about what could happen. And they've appeared during many of the wars that we've had, the Vietnam War, of course, World War II, the Korean War, and even the Iraqi conflict. That's another incident that I've got in my book about a UFO sighting over Iraq. In 2006.
That's a really a fascinating account. That I know Linda Howe has an audio interview with that. What, Sergeant Koch? Or
right, absolutely.
And that thing was absolutely enormous. I was going to ask you to talk about that at some point here for sure. But what do you think was behind that, or their purpose there, or what might have been going on there? Why that thing was there, and it was there just for the longest time, wasn't it? Or?
It was there for a while, long enough for the entire platoon to see it. They looked underneath that craft. David Mark, I forget his first name, said that it covered the entire the sky over a small town called Makassib, which is just south of Baghdad Airport. It was there for a long time. And then they had to move out, and when they turned around, it was gone. But what was the purpose? I don't know what the purpose was, but obviously they wanted them to see it in a war zone. And again, these things have appeared in war zones. I've got multiple stories of UFOs in Vietnam, stories in, like I said, the Korean War and World War II. So they want us to know we're here. I think they're concerned that we are so warlike. And now we've got these weapons of mass destruction, which could completely annihilate the planet and damage all living things on the planet. So I do think they are concerned about that, and that's one of the reasons they're here.
Right, yeah. Do you think that if we actually got to the point of launching nuclear weapons, they would actually intervene and stop it before it really, you know, exploded, or would they let us just...
No. You know, I think that's an open question. I have no way of knowing what they would do in that situation. I think, you know, I had to guess, I think they want us to take that step, that major step of eliminating nuclear weapons. Right now, we've got a very precarious situation. We've got 9 countries that have nuclear weapons, and some of those countries have unstable governments, like Pakistan, for example. North Korea has nuclear weapons, and of course, Iran may try to get nuclear weapons if we don't come to an agreement here shortly. But we've got and Russia, of course, is a nuclear power that has been, as you say, belligerent lately, and, you know, telling the world that they're a nuclear power and kind of brandishing those nuclear weapons. So we're still in a very much precarious situation with regard to nukes.
Yeah, I'm just real curious about it. How many times is they're going to have to keep reminding us, you know, by dismantling the missiles and before we start to heed the message? And do you know of any evidence of maybe our government is starting to try to heed the message in some way and respond to them in appropriate way to let them know? Yeah, go ahead.
We entered an agreement with the Russia, called the New START Treaty, which required us to reduce our arsenal to about 1,500 weapons, nuclear weapons. That's both undersea and land-based and airborne weapons. And we were making progress. You know, we're going to have mutual inspections on these things. And then we had this crisis over Ukraine with Russia. So now we've got worse relationships now with Russia, and so that's kind of been put on hold. So there was progress being made, but now who knows what's going to happen. So another critical area, of course, is on, I think, November 24th is the deadline for an agreement with Iran on their nuclear program. Now, if we can't get an agreement with Iran, then we've got Israel, which is another nuclear power, by the way, threatening that they may just go ahead and attack Iran's nuclear facilities. And of course, that could cause some sort of a war or a conflict in the Middle East, another one.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we've got to work much harder to keep the peace with nuclear weapons. You know?
Yeah.
And do you think that that's one of the reasons why they keep trying to show themselves to us, let us know that they're here, and try to push for us to work towards an advocacy or some other?
I do.
Okay.
I do think that's one of the reasons they're showing themselves. Again, I think because we are armed to the teeth still with nuclear weapons, we pose a danger to ourselves and possibly them. They probably are threatened if we have nuclear war here on Earth. Who knows what kind of connections there are between ETs and ourselves. I think that's one of the main reasons they're here. They see how warlike we are. We've got nuclear weapons, and this could pose a real danger to us and to them.
Wow. Now, what kind of, because I know you said back in the 80s, you feel like you're really pushed towards advocacy against nuclear arms and so forth. Is there anything that you're doing now other than raise awareness on the Disclosure Act?
Well, I continue my public speaking about this phenomenon, different aspects of the phenomenon. So the other major goal of mine, of course, is to obtain disclosure, at least get the government to admit that this is a reality and that we have to deal with it, because what's happened here is the government is holding these secrets. Now, when I say government, I'm talking about really an international cabal that's a small group of people within governments. So let's say the United States has some people within the CIA, within the NSA, within the military intelligence community that are aware of this phenomenon and actually working doing the types of things that, I outline in my book, certain activities like the collection of downed craft artifacts, the back engineering effort, the analysis, the secrecy. Mm-hmm. So all these activities that this international UFO cabal is doing. But what the result is, we've got a secret group within government that is obtaining government resources. By the way, you know, they're using money from black projects, for which there's no oversight, no effective oversight, and working as a government within a government. Okay, so that's, to me, that's very corruptive, and it's wrong. The public has a right to know that this phenomenon is real, and has a right to be part of the conversation as to, you know, what to do about it.
Yeah, I remember hearing something in regards to the Black Projects and the funding from one of the documentaries that Stephen Greer put out, and he said it was like a couple trillions of dollars that were Black funded that no one knows what they did or where they went and how they were spent.
I have no doubt that over the years, we're talking maybe in the trillions, but it's hard to say just how much money has been spent on these.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in your book, you cover some of the more, convincing cases. You said, I think, over 20 that you were certain as you could be were real and evidence of the reality of the phenomenon. Could you maybe talk about what you think maybe is the most sensational case in the annals of ufology that you have looked into and personally, you know, maybe have some information you're privy to that's not generally available to other UFO researchers that you can share with us? I know you've talked about some things that other researchers don't know about, you know, that are, it's not general knowledge. I know that.
I do cover some cases that are not generally known. Some cases that come to mind have to do with, again, mostly over nuclear weapons facilities, such as the Schostenberg case, which is a NATO base in the Netherlands. And that was, we have a witness who has come forward with her actual name and confirmed that she saw this UFO, a very large UFO, near the base on the day prior to a UFO sighting seen by many of the base personnel, and was actually investigated by the UFO group in Netherlands. That is well documented, well investigated, and very well substantiated. But it's one of many UFO cases over NATO bases. Another one was Aviano Air Base in Italy, and another one is the Reynolds and Forrest case. As far as one of the more amazing cases is the one in 1976 at Ellsworth Air Force Base, South Dakota. And in this case, we have another missile launch officer underground. A UFO comes over and interferes with his missiles. And his guards shoot 180 rounds of ammo at the UFO. And he, to no effect, but he himself had missing time period in the capsule, and which he can't account for the time. And later he was ordered to go to the base hospital. They drugged him and interrogated him. And this was people from Office of Naval Intelligence. And then he was sent home for another 30 days and then came back. And then they had some kind of device monitoring his activity 24/7. That was pretty extreme. They really wanted to keep tabs on this guy. But I just talked to another witness who, and these were security guards, who had observed the UFO over the missile sites. And again, this was Ellsworth, but this was a couple of years later, 1979, I believe. But they had 3.5 hours of missing time. After seeing the UFO, they blacked out 3.5 hours later. They woke up, and of course it was snowing there at the time, and the snow was up past their windows, and they couldn't account for that 3.5 hours. So there's a lot of strangeness involved with this. Hello?
Is everybody okay? Hello. Yeah, we're okay.
I'm getting a lot of static.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Feedback, sir.
Anyway, another very strange aspect of this, in 1968, Minot Air Force Base. And we have a B-52 pilot coming in to land at Minot. He's a general officer comes on and says, would you go around and then check this one area down the ground and see if you see anything? And sure enough, he sees this UFO hovering above a missile site. And reports it. He lands the plane. He's debriefed by this general officer, who tells him that that UFO took a 20 tons, mind you, lid, which we had a cover over the missile launcher itself, the tube, 20 tons, and just simply removed it. So that's another amazing aspect of this. But that is, again, that is well-researched. It's a well-documented case. A lot of strangeness involved with it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. In these cases, these UFOs that are witnessed, are they, like, similar, like balls of light? Are they, like, more tangible saucer type UFOs, or are they all just varying?
Yeah, they've been observed in many different kinds of shapes. All those that you mentioned, the one over my a missile site was oval shaped, glowing red object. It was more like an oval shape. There have been balls, almost like, perfect spheres, balls of light type UFOs that came over the missile sites. Again, I mentioned the large triangular craft. There are V-shaped craft. Many different shapes. A lot of the reports talk about these objects being transparent or translucent, where you could see right through them. There are cases where these objects disappear and then reappear almost immediately at another location. So, yeah, shapes vary.
Mhm. Wow. Well, and those are the ones that appear over the missile silos and all that, or is that just the ones just been reported over all the military bases?
Well, like I said, over the missile sites, we've seen the oval shape, the circular or spherical shape.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You said that will appear often as like a glowing orange, huge orange ball
right.
of light, and then it will transform into a regular kind of a flying saucer craft
yeah.
or thing. I,
right.
It's very curious.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we do have one drawing of. One over Minot Air Force Base. I think this is a 1966 sighting over Minot, where the airman actually drew a sketch, and it was more saucer shaped. It was like the classic saucer with a kind of a bulb on the top, bulge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
And then the one, but the one in Minot was more of a. More of a horseshoe shape. Only the it wasn't a horseshoe. It was near oval, but then the one end of it was kind of squared off.
Yeah.
So, and also, it had a kind of a protrusion behind it that had a sickle. It looked like a sickle behind it, which was kind of unusual. I've never seen anything like that, but there's a drawing of that. And that's, again, that's the 1968 Bradford Runyon case. Major Bradford Runyon was the primary witness in that one.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, I think your book is, it's a short book, but you got some new information there that most people are not privy to in the UFO research, I think, and which makes it a very worthwhile book for people to look at to get some education from someone who is privy to some good resources or information from reliable witnesses. So, once again, how can people obtain a copy of this book? It's on Amazon.com for one place and what?
Right, Amazon. I think Barnes Noble carries it, and quite a few bookstores, I think, if you check around some of your bookstores. People can go to my website, too, I'm not selling it from my website. But they can go there to spiralgalaxy.org and see the witness testimony. And I've got audio tape and documents supporting my case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing about your book, I have to comment that it does, come across as someone who really knows what they're talking about, who's really done the research, and it's very sobering to read the book. I mean, I've been doing, UFO research and reading about it for like 30 years, and it struck me, too. I think I was Stanton Friedman in the forward was commenting about, it's one of the best books he's ever read on the subject, and so it's really, you come across as totally credible source of information on the subject.
Thank you, Eddie. Yeah, I appreciate Stan Friedman's comments, too. I've known Stan for a long time.
Yeah.
For the audience, can you give us the name of your book?
It's called Unidentified, the UFO Phenomenon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we may have some listeners that want to ask some questions. We're kind of late to give out our number, but if you want to call in, if you want to ask a question, call us at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142 if you've got a question here. I finally got home and got settled in here, so now I can focus my mind good. I had to drive 22 miles to get home here, and you heard some static. That was me trying to get out of the car in the rain. So anyway.
Okay. Yeah, and when our callers do call in, please, when you dial 347-838-9142, please press 1 to get yourself into the host queue, and I can see that you are wanting to come in and ask a question. Again, that's 347-838-9142, and then press 1.
Robert, what are your plans at this point for the future and your continuing research into this phenomenon? Or I know you had about given up on just doing any more work on the subject. I think your wife encouraged you to keep on with it. but what are your plans? Do you have another book you're thinking about or what?
I haven't really thought about another book. I just got this one published, so I may take a rest from writing a book for a while. But I do, of course, I'm not going to just quit the subject. I'm entirely hooked in many, many ways. This subject is endlessly fascinating. New things are always coming up. New witnesses are always coming forward, which is great, because that's what we need. We need more new credible witnesses coming forward and telling their stories. And I think eventually that's going to tip the scale towards disclosure if we get enough witnesses. I'm, of course, continue speaking. I'll be in Brazil the end of this month in Falls of the Iguaçu, and then in Germany, I think, early next year. That's all I've got planned for right now as far as speaking. Again, I'll continue to do shows, radio shows, and speaking, and possibly writing another book. I think I may have another book left in me. We'll see.
Yeah. You know anything about this new movie coming out called Interstellar? If that addresses the UFO phenomenon at all, or anything?
Well, I think from what I've read, it sort of tracks what I'm believing or I'm thinking, and that is that we have got some enormous problems that we're facing on the planet here with regard to water shortages, with regard to food shortages, with regard to nuclear weapons, with regard to many things, global warming. And eventually we're going to have to find another place to live if we keep this up. And I think that's what the basis of Interstellar is, looking for another planet that's habitable. I think that's probably part of us, part of our subconscious effort in the space program is we need to find other planets that harbor life that we might be able to inhabit at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds interesting. I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be a really good movie and with some sobering things to think about, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
Do you know anything about this documentary that came out also just recently called Mirage Men? I think it was filmed in England. Lennon Howell is on it, and it's about this Doty, this guy that was with the Air Force, was a disinformation artist, and how he's coming clean, confessing some things where he was trying to torment some researchers. You know anything about that movie, the documentary Mirage Men?
I don't know anything about the movie, but I've heard about Doty and his effort to discredit a man called by the name of Paul Benowitz, I think his name was.
Right, yeah.
Who had some UFO sightings and actually, I think he took photographs, et cetera. And Doty had worked for the AFOSI, Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and tried to discredit and I guess succeeded in discrediting Benowitz. And I think eventually Benowitz wound up in an insane asylum over this.
Right, yeah.
which is pretty harsh. But it shows to the extent, and if Doty did come clean, I don't know that he has, but if he did, I'm grateful to him for that, because it does show that there is a serious disinformation effort going on by this UFO cabal, and they'll do anything to discredit witnesses, to ridicule them, and to keep this out of mainstream consciousness or mainstream media. And they've been very effective in doing that.
Yeah, I know Stephen Bassett was real concerned here last year about some UFO investigators that were actually murdered, he thinks, because of their getting too close to some what was regarded as sensitive information, not for public consumption at all. And I don't know, he was quite alarmed by that. I don't know if you've looked into that aspect of it, where it's getting to be dangerous for some investigators to look into certain areas, or especially if they uncover, some really sensitive information and to make it public. Have you had any problems with warnings to you to not investigate certain things, or is that something you can talk about?
No. I can say that I haven't been overtly threatened. I haven't felt threatened. There is an investigator who's now deceased. His name is Dr. James McDonald. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. McDonald and apparently died of a suicide, shot himself with a pistol out in the desert of Arizona. But there are some people that believe that he didn't kill himself, that he was actually murdered. And McDonald was very much in the know on the UFO question. He did a lot of excellent research. And by the way, if any of you listeners want to look at some of the documents that McDonald uncovered, the University of Arizona has an archive of his papers, which I've looked at a couple of times. I need to go back there and research him some more. But that is a possibility where he was offed by this UFO cabal. I can't think of another one that comes to mind right away. But it's certainly possible. During the Roswell investigations, or the Roswell case, witnesses were threatened with their lives and the lives of their loved ones to keep quiet.
One has to wonder, why is it so damn serious that they have to scare people like that or threaten their lives and all to keep it secret? I mean, why is it so imperative it has to be so secretive about it? I don't quite really fathom that. Is there something about it that we don't even know yet ourselves, that why they might be wanting it so secretive?
You have to look at the kind of people we're talking about. We're talking about CIA operatives, for example, that are just, let's face it, they're trained to kill if necessary, and if they think the mission requires it, and they have no qualms about that. I mean, that's the kind of people that are holding these secrets, and they take this very seriously. Like I said, they monitor witnesses probably for their lifetimes. People mm-hmm. like myself and others, I'm sure I'm being monitored. But again, I haven't been threatened overtly. One of the witnesses I talk about in the book, I just mentioned her name, Josie Swinenberg, the lady that had the sighting near Schulsterberg Air Force Base in the Netherlands. She confided in me that she was contacted by an intelligence type just a few years ago, and he told her information that only a person would have known if they had been at the location where Josie was when she had her sighting. So they have been monitoring her all these years, since 1979.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of these, what like, Kabbalist group, I've heard, I don't know about the credibility of this, I've heard people say that like this Kabbalist group would be involved with like these more malevolent ETs making pacts with them for technology and stuff like that. Have you heard anything like that? Is that one reason why they might have the qualm with letting that information be exposed or anything at all?
No, I can't make that leap. I don't have any evidence to support that. It does seem reasonable to assume that since there have been down craft, ET craft, and there have been stories of ETs surviving those crashes and being captured, that some sort of communication has gone on between this UFO cabal and the ETs themselves. Whether or not they've made agreements, I have no way of knowing. I know there are a lot of stories out there, but I certainly couldn't confirm any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I just wonder what repercussions they're afraid of if these investigators that they silenced were allowed to continue their work. I mean, they're not going to get much serious public attention, I don't think, because the public is so, you know, controlled with by the media and the Air Force's statements. There's nothing to the phenomenon. So what repercussions are they really afraid of that if these researchers continue doing what they're doing, that they're going to get some kind of massive public reaction started? Or I can't imagine.
Well, they're afraid of the truth coming out, certainly. And if more witnesses like myself, I think I've got a pretty well documented, pretty well supported story, come out. Of course, that's going to affect their keeping the secret. So that's why I encourage more people to come forward with their stories and talk about it. Let's see how much of this we can get disclosed. So, you know, some of the information like what I've got in my book and what I've talked about is a disclosure of sorts, right? It's I'm disclosing what I know. I know I'm disclosing what other people have told me as witnesses that I believe is true. And so the more information that's out there, the more credible this becomes.
You know, there's so much information is available that anybody, a half intelligent person, can read up on the subject and know, you know, there's definitely something going on with the UFO phenomenon, and they can become sufficiently concerned and alarmed. But, you know, that's a very small minority of people that are going to do that kind of independent, you know, investigating on their own and reading about it. But the information is out there. So tons of kind of reliable information, like your book, you know. So, I mean, I don't know why they're afraid of other people doing research that might, you know, tip the scale somehow to making people more aware. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But I know the information's there because I'm well aware of most of it myself, you know. And
right.
Anybody can become aware of it if they just do a little reading, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
My question to you, Robert, would be if the disclosure happens, you know, as widespread as you are hoping it will be one day, what do you hope the outcome of that knowledge to the mass population will be? Well, do you hope for, like, communication with the ETs? Do you hope that we live more harmoniously? What is it that you expect to happen?
Well, the first thing that I would like to see happen is a breakthrough in this excessive secrecy that we have in government. And I talk about that at length in my book, too, this excessive secrecy. And if we can get the government to admit to the fact that this is a phenomenon that the people within the government do know about it and are studying the problem, that at least will start a new dialogue between the people and its government. Right now, we've got a secret government within the government that's operating, without public oversight, really, and making decisions about this phenomenon that affect all of us. And that's not right. And that's what I'd like to see broken, that thing broken through that wall. How this would affect our relationship with ET, I have no way of knowing, but it would certainly open up a lot of avenues for a new dialogue again between the people and the government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know in your book you engage in a little speculation about maybe the ETs themselves will force disclosure because they may. People. Yeah,
They may. There are more and more overt sightings, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
People see these things more and more, and they seem to be sticking around more and more longer. Who knows what their plan is. Now, ET may have a plan for disclosure, too. In other words, they may decide to land on the White House lawn. Who knows?
Yeah, well, look at the Stephenville case, man. That was a major wake up call if there ever was one, you know.
Right.
That just a little tiny ripple in public consciousness, though.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Phoenix Lights case. Thousands of people saw the huge object over Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
We have about eight minutes left in the show, Robert. If you would give out your information on how to get to your websites again, title of your book, where our listeners can get a hold of your book, and any last words that you would like our audience to know.
Well, my website is www.spiralgalaxy.org. You can purchase my book on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. As far as any kind of a final message, I'd encourage your listeners to look into this phenomenon, do their own research. There are plenty of good books out there besides mine. This is a very complex phenomenon. We talked about abductions, but I think crop circles are involved, cattle mutilations. It's a very complex subject, and I think your listeners would do well to educate themselves on it because in the future, there will be more and more coming out about this phenomenon. And, if you can, write to your congressman. Tell them, take this thing seriously.
Yeah. Well, I sure appreciate the part that you're playing here in helping to make people more aware. This is an excellent book that just came out. And I guess you're going to be interviewed on some other radio shows about this in the near future here. I guess George Knapp needs to interview you on the new book, too. I don't know if he's interviewed you about that yet. But.
George Knapp has interviewed me, and you can probably go to his website and listen to an archive interview of myself with George Knapp. Just happened, I think, couple of weeks ago.
Oh, great. Yeah, I'd like to hear that interview. If we have any listeners, it's your last chance if you want to jump in here with a comment or question here. 347-838-9142. I know we've had listeners out there, and for some reason they're hanging back tonight. They're not jumping in. I'm a little surprised.
Well, it's election night. People are probably glued to their TVs on.
Yeah.
That is election night.
Do we have anybody in our chat room there tonight, Justin? Are there any questions?
No questions, no comments. Just people just really listening in and enjoying the show. Again, it's been great having you on here, Robert. Your information is amazing, and you're such a credible source that it's just refreshing to hear your information put out there in such a way, especially from someone who's recognized professional in that field for so long, and knowing what is a UFO and being able to help discern the difference between, you know, hoaxes and et cetera.
Yeah. Thank you for your kind words. This is a real phenomena. This is not make-believe. Like I said to your audience, you need to take this seriously. Do your own research. Look into it. You'll be amazed.
Yeah. I can imagine your experience there when you were at that nuclear launch facility and the thing was right outside the gate. I mean, it must have been unnerving to you. I can imagine, you know. And how could you have a lifelong fascination with the subject after that?
Yeah, it was unnerving. I thought we were under some sort of an attack.
Talk about this one guard was out there facing this thing, this glowing red spherical craft, and he was just, just a few yards from it, I think, and he was standing there in front of it, and all he had was a rifle. And I imagine he was about to totally freak out.
and he wanted
to talk to him about it, and you didn't get a chance ever to really talk to him. I thought that was, you said that haunted you ever since, you never really talked to him. I guess he was having some serious psychological repercussions from that.
A lot of were frightened. They begged me to speak with them and have a meeting with them after the fact, and I just couldn't because I just signed a non-disclosure statement.
Right.
And that's another motivator for me to keep going. I owe it to them, really.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for being on. I thoroughly enjoyed the show, and good luck with your continued research and making people more aware of what the truth is, and waking up and smell the cosmic coffee there, as I could say. Okay.
Thank you, Eddie.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night. Thanks.
Enjoyed it. Good night.
Good night.
Yes, good night. Thank you all.